There is never a problem in Day Spring getting people to talk to one another. No. Okay. Tension. Holding the tension. The problem is that if sometimes people talk about the holding attention when really what they're talking about... Oh, gosh. Okay, we're still good to go. They talk about holding attention when what they're really talking about is not having to take a decision about what you believe. Okay? What happens is that we can believe all sorts of contradictory things. We can believe the devil is God and God is the devil, and we can believe it doesn't matter what I live, how I live, but then on the other hand it does, and so on. And that's not what I'm talking about, but there are tensions in what we look at. And here's just a little bit, for those of you who want it, for those of you who don't, you probably need it more, of linguistics. Because if you look at this, you see this, I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you. Okay? I will make your name great and you will be a blessing. Okay, here it goes. So, if we start with God blesses Abraham, okay, we get the other end. Abraham blesses others. Okay? If you want your word for the day, that's the word chiasmus. It's crossover structure. You get all the way through the Bible. It's chiastic structure. And that is the way that you understand money and God's blessing. You understand it as a chiastic structure. Because God blesses us, we bless others. That's the way we understand blessing. Blessing is never for us. Our worship is always missional. The drive is always outwards. If we come into a meeting, we feel bad. At the end of a meeting, we feel good. That is not the end. That's only one half of the formula. It's not come to resolution. God's intention is always that in blessing us, we will lead on to bless others. So, powerful thought, powerful idea summed up in one verse. And if you'd like to know a good summer study, good relaxing read, start from Genesis 12, run on through the story of Abraham. Fantastic story. Last time I did it, I photocopied the pages out of the Bible, so they just took a small space in the middle of a sheet, and that gave me the chance to write and scribble and put heretical ideas all the way around it. And I took it on holiday with me, and now I know that most of you aren't in the position where you're doing the granddad thing, but I was, so that each morning before I did anything else, I would sit outside our room, and before I got interrupted, I would spend time going through the story of Abraham. Now, you may not have an hour every morning, but I'm sure you could find a little bit of time to read a bit that gets stuck in your head. And there are some crazy stories in the story of Abraham. There are loads of crazy stories that are absolutely fundamental because it's right at the beginning of the Bible and you get patterns of lots of things that are going to happen. Now, that was Abraham. So we talked about the tension between blessed and being blessed and being a blessing. Next thing we talked about was we talked about channels, about the fact that God is our, we didn't use these words, but God is the source. He uses other things to bring resource. And I could see on people's faces that this was a new category, a new idea for lots of people, right? If we think that our benefits are the only source we've got of finance, okay, we are stuffed. If we think that salary is the only source we've got of income, then And I'm not talking about going around and nicking stuff, or of shaving your expenses, or that kind of thing, or even, well, I suppose boot sales could be a good way of releasing money, but I've never found a boot sale where I wanted to actually to buy anything. I've found places where my kids wanted to buy rubbish that we have that we had previously thrown away. But God has many channels through which he can send resources. We gave some examples of those. And I want to tell a little story from the Bible about that. Not making it a big focus this morning, but I just wanted to move on to something. And to do that, we need to think about what a siege is. Okay? Sieges are fairly common.
As rebel soldiers and government troops continue to fight over Syria's largest city, humanitarian conditions are getting worse. Food and cooking gas in short supply. And power outages are making life a struggle for Aleppo's 3 million residents. Tens of thousands of civilians have fled already as pro-government troops continue their siege, which has lasted for more than 11 days. Tuesday, the head of the Arab League accused the Syrian government of atrocities, and Syrian rebels seized a pair of police stations in Aleppo. Meanwhile, the violence is fueling a growing refugee crisis in neighboring countries. According to the Turkish Prime Minister's office, tens of thousands of refugees are being sheltered in camps along the border. Officials say they haven't seen a massive surge yet in refugees from Aleppo, but they're prepared to house up to 100,000 refugees. Brian Thomas, the Associated Press.
Okay, sieges happen today. The siege of Aleppo was relatively short-lived, but you could hear that the first thing that happened when a siege occurred was that food, medical supplies, water, all began to get restricted. The siege of Homs, which went on, for 2 years, they actually led to building tunnels, which is another thing that happens in sieges quite often. You read about that in the Bible as well. But this particular siege happened and is reported in 2 Kings chapter 6. What happened was that a guy called Ben-Hadad, Ben wasn't his Christian name, Ben-Hadad was a sort of family name, conducted a siege of Samaria, and in Samaria the people completely stuck. Food ran out very, very quickly. They didn't have any means of preserving food, of course, and it reached the point where a donkey's head was sold, not just his tongue, was sold for a whole load of money. If you want the story about the tongue, you talk to Nathan afterwards. A donkey's head was sold for 80 shekels. A whole load of money. Wheat was sold at a colossal price. People were starving. And there were reports of cannibalism as well. Whether they're true or not, they always surface under those circumstances. And there was a story that was told. And the king was asked to judge over this. But into this context comes the prophet Elisha. And Elisha says, by this time, tomorrow, there's going to be extreme deflation, not inflation, there's going to be price deflation. You're going to change from a situation of scarce supply and high demand to the point where there is a huge surplus of food, and so much so that people don't pay very much money for it at all. Okay? And immediately the people he was talking to started thinking channels, right? Out here you've got Elisha saying, God is going to do this. And over here you've got some people, the captain of the guard or whoever he was, is saying, not sure about that. How could that happen? And he makes this famous statement which has gone down in history. Even if God were to open windows in the sky, this could never happen in time. even if God were to open windows in the sky. And the story is that Elisha turned to him. You know, sometimes these prophets seem to have a very, very short fuse. And he turned to the captain of the guard and said, well, it's going to happen, but you'll never see it. Well, the story is that during the night, a rumour arose among the troops that were around the city that, in fact, another king had done a deal, done an alliance, and there was that they were sending invading forces. So the whole army got up and just ran. And of course, when armies retreat, it's always the case they leave a load of stuff behind. I think Roy was talking to me about that, because he was saying in the first Gulf War, he and his team had to move in beforehand to set up all the stuff. Okay, and one of his responsibilities as an NCO throughout the end of his force's life was actually to sign off everything. Yeah, because the stuff was given to him and he was responsible for every parachute and every piece of kit. And if a parachute disappeared, "Oi, mate, do you want to buy a parachute?" sort of thing. It was him whose neck was in a noose over it. But then, of course, when it came to the end of the Gulf War, they just ticked it off, signed it off, and nobody worried about it. So by the time it came out, the Gulf War was his salvation after selling all those parachutes. Sorry, these stories do stick in my mind. So these guys had gone and they'd left all the stuff. Now, you know all about lepers in the Old Testament, don't you? One of the things is, if you had leprosy, which was just a sort of really bad eczema, psoriasis kind of thing, it was a disease which, because other people could catch it, because it was infective, you're excluded from the community. And so these guys were outside the city. And if the people inside were badly off, the people outside were worse off. And they were sitting there saying, look, we've got nothing to eat, what we're going to do? And one of them said, well, look, let's go down to the Arameans' camp. Because if we go down to the camp, at least we might be given some food. And if they kill us, they kill us. We're no worse off than we were anyway. So they go down, and the place is empty. So they absolutely stuff themselves. You know, they're sitting there partying. You could just imagine it. Four guys sat round these candles, eating like they've never eaten. And then they realise that there's money around as well. So they take the money, and they go and find a place to bury it. Go back to another tent, start in on this, and they suddenly think, God is not going to let us get away with this. We've got good news, and if we keep it to ourselves, we're in trouble. That's another one of those Bible statements which is part of our essence. We've got good news. God's not going to let us get away with it if we keep it to ourselves. Halls, back on the subject, concentrate where we're going. So what they did, they went back to the gates of the city in the middle of the night, and they bashed on the gates, okay, and the guards were inside. And they said... you could imagine the sort of conversation that would go backwards and forwards. They would say, excuse me, who is it? It's us. Who's us? Oh, well, we're the people with leprosy. You chucked out the city. Go away. We haven't got any food to give you. No, we need to tell you a message. The army's gone. What do you mean the army's gone? Go away. You're nuts. You know, you get this backwards and forwards, and they wonder whether they're spies, and in the end they look and there is zero movement in the enemy camp. Nothing's happening. No smoke, no fire, nobody going to get water, nothing happening at all. And so they get the captain of the guard down, this guy who said, even if God opened windows in heaven, there wouldn't be enough. And he arranges, stands himself in the middle and says, okay, now, one at a time, very carefully, opens the gates and people trample him to death in the rush. Right? Like the next sail on Boxing Day morning. Yeah? He gets trampled to death on the way through. There he was looking for windows in the sky. He had thought about one possible channel that God could use to provide, you see. So, you need to think about windows in the sky. How's God going to do it? What's God going to do to make a difference? You know, I talked about this thing 2 weeks ago, and I mentioned some things and thought no more about them. Hadn't even thought about what God would do to supply. And one of those things that you read about, I think it's happened to us 2 or 3 times before in our adult life. I suddenly found in my papers, when I picked them up last Sunday, a brown envelope, which had got money in it. And there was a note in it telling me to do a particular thing with the money. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough to buy a seaside flat, if you remember that conversation. But there was money in there, which was great. I had not thought about brown envelopes. I hadn't thought about refunds from the tax authorities. I had not thought about fields. You remember the story I told you about a field that a church found that it owned, and instead of it being worth £200 a year, was between £1 million and £2 million a year. There are all sorts of ways that God can supply. And if you have a need, and if you have a heart not only to be blessed, but to be a blessing, then there is no limit. Except there is a limit. Right? And the limit is faith. Because there is one thing, it doesn't matter how bad you are, how weak you are, how many mistakes you make, God can still work with you. But the Bible tells us really clearly, without what one thing is it impossible to please God? Without faith is impossible to please God. And faith starts believing that, well, if God wanted to open windows in heaven, and if he wanted to drop roast beef and bread, he could do it. And of course, built into those... Well, let's come on to the next story, because this story is a bit extreme, because lots of us get stuck on the fact that we don't have very much money. One of the characteristics of Dayspring at the moment is God is adding people to us. And I have to say, I haven't checked anybody's bank balance, don't have the ability to do it, not interested in doing it. But God is adding people to us who, to be honest, probably haven't got very much money. And there are people who are moving away from us who have had a lot of money and have done a great job in supporting us and helping us. So we're saying, God, we're going to need some windows in the sky if you're going to provide for us. But hey, here's the next story. Oh, that was the channel stuff, wasn't it? Let's watch this one. Okay, one of these little tiny cameos in the Bible. Jesus said, Luke tells the story that Jesus went into the temple, and while he was there, he watched this poor widow lady, somebody who got no source of income, and she went and put a tiny amount of money, right, what would it be? It would have been a 1p, whatever the smallest coin was, she would have put 1p. And in order to do it, she would have had to go past, because they had these great big bowls, massive clinking metal bowls, and there were these rich guys opening their money bags, and they were going, don't look, please, I'm giving some money. And dying, it would go in. Oh, did that money make a noise? Who put that money in? And then they'd put some more in. And piles of money were coming in. And you could imagine for the people who were trying to run the household of God, as it was at the time, they were thinking, great, we're okay for another month. You know, we're okay. We can think about some new tyres or a new flipping generator, or we can pay for cabaret for another time. There was a chance that we can actually keep people full time, giving priority to the things they are. So there's that going on, and there's this lady just puts a tiny bit in, and Jesus says, they gave out of all that they'd got. She gave
everything she'd got. Now, there's a bit of tension in that. In fact, there are a couple of tensions in that. But before I talk about the tensions, let me get somebody else to preach on this. I thought this was really brilliant. You can actually get the whole series of these, if you like, but I'll reference them. Come on, move. Yeah.
Fantastic story in Mark chapter 12. Jesus goes into the temple and he sits down, the Bible says, opposite the place where people come and give their offering, where they put the money into the treasury for God. Jesus is sitting there and one person after another is coming by who's wealthy and very well off, and they're putting in these huge offerings, dropping these, you know, massive bags of coins into the offering. You know, you can just hear it in your mind, you know, the sound, the thud of these things hitting, you know, the floor, just this massive offering, and everyone notices and everyone's celebrating. Everybody's going, man, that's incredible. Look what they put into the offering, you know, that's awesome. And then in the midst of all of that comes this little widow woman who just drops in, the Bible says, two small copper coins, and they're worth like less than a penny. It's basically, you know, she puts in essentially nothing into the offering. It's barely anything. And this is one of those moments where Jesus goes, you know, I see things differently than you do. And Jesus is going, man, I need to bring everybody around to my way of seeing this thing. And so he calls over his disciples in Mark 12, verse 43. The Bible says, calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, I tell you the truth, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. This is one of those moments where, you know, you just have to imagine that the disciples kind of were, you know, just looking at Jesus like, what? What are you talking about? Like, she did not put in more than everybody else. You know, this is totally one of those moments where I get so challenged because I'm going, man, I just don't see things the way that God sees them. Obviously, Jesus is evaluating this moment and these offerings and these people by something other than what I am. I know I look at it and I look at the dollar amount of the offering that's given and I go, man, God can use that. I mean, think about all the incredible things we can do for God's kingdom with this money. And I mean, this is incredible. We've all heard about, you know, people who have given large amounts and huge offerings. We're so impressed. We're blown away. How could anybody give that kind of money? That's what I always think. How could somebody give $1 million? Like, that's incredible. You know, I always would look at that and think to myself, you know, that's what impresses me. That's what's a big deal to me. I look at a big offering and a small one, and I celebrate the big one because I think, man, God can use that. And apparently Jesus looks past the money. Apparently he just kind of sweeps that off to the side like, yeah, 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 like whatever. And he looks past that. The rich person who gave out of their abundance didn't really cost them anything. And he looks at this poor widow who gave basically everything she had. And Jesus says, forget about the dollars. I want the heart. Jesus says, that's what I can use. Forget about the money. It's the heart that I'm after. I can use a heart like that. I can use a heart that's willing to give everything. And so I'm always challenged by this story to pray, God, give me a heart like that with a woman, because I don't usually have that heart. I'm not sure that I've ever given like she gave that day. And I'm challenged. And I want to challenge you, pray, God, give me a heart that's willing to give until it hurts.
Okay, so let's put that capsule on one side and say, yep, we'll come back to that. We'll just finish off with that. So it's the heart. There's a couple of tensions in here. The first one is this, of course, big, small. That's the one that we look at. And the reason that this matters is because we get mixed up a bit on whether we're giving to people or whether we're giving to God. Okay? That's the issue. Of course, in terms of the programs, large sums of money do matter. But if primarily giving is an act of worship
You see, that's why we don't allow singing to hijack the term worship, because there are so many other ways of worshipping. And giving is part of our worship, is part of how we bow down, how we say, God, you're the king and I'm not. When we give a little bit, that's where it really makes a difference. I was brought up, my parents didn't have very much money, and still don't really. The first time my dad started earning a decent income, at least a comfortable income, was when he became a full-time pastor at the age that I am now, I think he was. He was certainly in his 60s, but before then it had always really been on the edge for us. But we were taught to give. And I can remember occasions on which I had a good job. Actually, I had two jobs on a Saturday. I had one in the morning and I had one in the afternoon. On Saturday morning, I was a butcher's boy, and on Saturday afternoon, I worked in an electrical shop, and I knew about these strange things called valves, and I could tell you which kind of valves went in which sorts of tellies, and they'd just introduced something that was phenomenal and strange and allowed you to have really small radios called transistors, and that was the amazing thing, to be able to think of those big ones, that little one. So I would have quite a lot of money in my pocket, and there was the opportunity to spend that on clothes, or to spend it on girls, or to... Yeah, there were lots of things to spend my money on when I was 14, 16. But I can remember on at least one occasion being in a missionary meeting where somebody was talking about preaching the gospel, and I would have in my pocket two pieces of money, neither of which exist now. If you get really old-fashioned history books, you can find out about them. One of those things was called a 10 bob note, a 10 shilling note, right, which is worth 50p now. And I used to get 40p was my pay, and that was great, because you could buy a shirt for 40p. Gosh, it sounds as though it was Queen Victoria was alive. It probably is that long ago, really. And the other was half crown, and I used to get about 4 shillings in tips, sort of delivering the meat on Saturdays. And I'd have these two things in my 10 bob note and 10 shilling note and half crown. And I can remember thinking, oh, if only instead of a 10 shilling note, I'd got 4 half crowns in my pocket, because then I could give 5 shillings. But I can remember occasions on which the 10 shilling note went in there as I was learning to give. Unfortunately, my parents didn't do such a good job of teaching me to save, which is also part of where, because if you ain't got no money, there's no point in saving anyway. You just live from year to year, week to week, and you live like we did, in a very constrained way, of anything spare went on having a holiday in the year. But I learned as well that God will provide. And here's the principle: the tension between giving and receiving is in your attitude to money. The tension between whether you're giving to God or giving to people is in your attitude to money. And fundamentally, here's my question for you this week: is your attitude to resources positive or is it negative? Right? Have you got a blessing mindset, or have you got a famine mindset? A famine mindset says there will never be enough. A blessing mindset is God has got everything that I need. And I want to tell you this, that if you start this week saying, God, I believe that you're my source of supply, it will actually change things for you. Because as you go through, you'll look at things not with a greedy mentality saying, why shouldn't I have that? But saying, God, if you've got that for me, you will supply. Yeah? See, that's where the change comes. You'll move away from grab to receive. And it will make a whole change. Because you remember what I said from, and with this we're finished, which is a bit of a strange verse to finish on, but I think it's where I've got to. Marion said it was in chapter 30 of Proverbs last week, wasn't it? This one about where the king says, Lord, give me neither poverty nor riches. Because
If I'm really hard up, then I might steal. And if I'm really rich, then I might forget you. And there's the danger, isn't it? That if we've got a money mindset, if we've got a negative attitude to money, we'll be thinking, gosh, I'll be comfortable. We'll be thinking, I can retire. Yeah? If you're not dead, you're not done. Retirement is not a concept that God's got anywhere. You know? God's interest is in us moving from one thing to another so that he can bless us and we can be a blessing. God, what I'm after is this. Not that I've got loads of money because I'll forget you and I won't need to look to you. Nor that I'm stuck in poverty, because we all know that it becomes very understandable under those circumstances that people get grabby. So what we're looking for is freedom. Freedom to have a positive attitude to money. That wants to be blessed, Lord, send it in. Why send it in? So that I can send it on. Okay? And of course there's another bit in the Bible, which we haven't got to, which that widow understood, where it says, give and it will be given unto you. Okay? Of course there's the current of receiving, but we said that's the easy bit, that's Paul's bit. Right, you know, receive first and then give. Jesus' bit is a bit harder, because he says give and it will be given. Sometimes we receive first and then we give, sometimes we give first and then we receive. Next week, other things being equal, which they rarely are, I'm going to be talking about living in the household of God and our responsibilities, and I'm going to shift from talking from 2 Corinthians to talking from 1 Corinthians. That's it.